Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Back in On the Drive. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. At the bottom of the hour, we are doing something really cool this week. Every day at 3:30, we will have a different Major League Baseball legend join us on the show. Coming up at 3:30, Chipper Jones will join us on the show. Former Braves great, one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Chipper Jones will be on the show coming up at the bottom of the hour. Keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. Chipper Jones coming up at 3:30. Your UFC 251 million pay-per-view buys. It was the most popular UFC event since 2018, where Conor McGregor fight Khabib.
Yeah, and then it happened. So a million buys is kind of the barometer for a very, very, very successful UFC buy. I mean, I think that Conor McGregor and maybe John Jones are the only fighters to headline a card that have gotten over a million buys. And I predicted this heading into the weekend. I think that there was a lot of interest for quote unquote Fight Island. You don't have to know anything about fighting. If there's a place called Fight Island, I want to see what that's all about. And then the guy who a couple of weeks ago I erroneously said was one of the 20 most recognizable American athletes
got
today.
The beats, I heard. That's what I heard. I don't know nothing about it, but I heard my man got the beat.
He changed his nickname yet?
No, he didn't change his nickname. It wasn't horrible. I mean, he didn't get choked out. He didn't get knocked out. He went the entire five rounds. And the thing about those championship fights, remember, a normal fight in the UFC in the octagon is 15 minutes. It's 3 5-minute rounds. Think about any fights that you've either seen or been in. Like, I'm not talking about a boxing match. I'm talking about an actual fight that you've been in, which is pretty much what mixed martial arts is. 15 minutes is a hell of a long time to be locked in a cage with another person trying to kick your ass. The championship fights are another two rounds, so he actually deserves a little bit of credit, my man Masvidal does. He was in there for 25 minutes, but the fight was boring. Then the fight before that with Max Holloway, a lot of people know that name. You don't have to know fighting to watch that one. He won the fight. They said that he lost. I was so excited for the card, and to be honest with you, it took way too long. The Masvidal-Usman fight didn't start until 12:15, so it actually started on Sunday morning in Kansas City.
All of that to see one dude get the beats.
Yeah, it wasn't what I was expecting, let's say that.
Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Chipper Jones. Chipper Jones will be on the show coming up in 30 minutes. So, Jeremy Fowler is doing something really cool. He's doing top 10 rankings voted on by 50 anonymous NFL personnel guys. So, he got to offensive linemen over the weekend, and people noticed that Mitchell Schwartz was not on the list. And a lot of Chiefs fans were tweeting him, understandably, why is Mitchell Schwartz not on the list? And Jeremy Fowler put, yes, Mitchell Schwartz is a snub. He's a really good player, great numbers across the board. But the truth is the NFL doesn't look at Mitchell Schwartz the way that the media does. Teams prioritize traits above most things, and Schwartz is an inferior athlete to these 10. I have always wondered why there appears to be such a gap between, I would say, media people like ourselves' evaluation of Mitchell Schwartz, I would say fellow NFL players who seem to give him a lot of credit, and then lists like this and awards like this. For a guy who's only made first team All-Pro one time in his career, for a guy who has not made the Pro Bowl, even though he has been first or second team All-Pro in the last four seasons, why he doesn't get these sort of accolades from NFL people has always been very puzzling to me. It's odd to me in 2020, there is such a weight given on physical traits, and if a guy can run a 4.4 or a 4.5 or hit certain physical barometers, when the answer should be very simple. Can he play? There are not 10 better football players at the tackle position in the NFL than Mitchell Schwartz. Not having him on the list is pretty ridiculous in my mind.
Well, he's got a couple of things going against him. One, he's a right tackle, and we all know that kind of the glory position on the offensive line is the left tackle position, especially for a team like the Chiefs, because you're protecting Pat's blind side. And the Chiefs have a pretty good one of those, number one overall pick several years ago in Eric Fisher. But if we're starting to rank the linemen and their talent on the Chiefs, I don't think anybody's going to tell you that Eric Fisher is better than Mitchell Schwartz. Hell, last year, Mitchell Schwartz allowed a grand total of, wait for it, 0 sacks against Patrick Mahomes. So, yeah, he's great. It's just the position that he plays. I mean, if I asked you to name 3 or 4 other right tackles in the NFL, I don't know about you, but I couldn't do it. So,
But I mean, that shouldn't matter on this list. Like, this list is 50 NFL personnel guys. Like, these are people that should be in the know. These are people, we're not asking random fan who is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. We're asking people who make the decisions in the NFL to not put him on the list and then say, well, he's not an elite athlete like these other guys. Well, he plays better than those other guys. Ultimately, isn't that what matters? It also goes to show me why they miss so much in the draft, why they take guys who have the physical traits, but the tape doesn't show them being elite players in college because they don't seem to value that as much.
Yeah, and again, I can't watch an offensive lineman and watch his first step or his hand movement or how he pass block versus run block and say, that guy's the best in the league. But I know a whole hell of a lot about football, and I talk about sports for a living, and I can look at the numbers, and I can watch the results, and I can watch Mitchell Schwartz and see that not one time did the guy that was opposite of him get to the quarterback. So you're right. If you want to talk about numbers and measurements and athleticism and accolades and Pro Bowls and first-team All-Pros and that, then Mitchell Schwartz isn't your guy. But if you want to talk about a guy that protects Patrick Mahomes better than anybody else would probably in the league at his position, then yeah, Mitchell Schwartz deserves all the credit in the world.
So, continuing on this top 10 list, they have now moved to edge rushers in the NFL. Another Chief, Frank Clark, not on this list. Do we think at some point this is a list that he needs to come onto, or is it one of those things where as long as the Chiefs continue to win Super Bowls, we can sort of live with him not being high on the list? So I'm looking at the list right now. He actually is at 8. So the top 10 list, DeMarcus Lawrence, who got a lot of money this offseason, Cam Jordan of the New Orleans Saints, Frank Clark is 8th on the list. I do think that if at some point they're going to be without Chris Jones, which looking at the contract situation, at some point I do expect them to be that. And given his production that he had in Seattle and the contract that he has here in Kansas City, I think Clark's going to have that monster season at some point in Kansas City. I think he's going to have that 12.5, 13, 14 sack season that most great edge rushers do.
He's done that one time. So that was in 2018. He had 13 sacks that year. I don't know how to judge Frank Clark's season last year, man, because at the beginning of the year, I was as harsh. I was probably harsher than anybody else on him because I saw the price tag the Chiefs gave him for $20 million through the first 5 games of the season. He had 9 tackles and he had 1 sack and he didn't play that often. And I thought, wait, what the hell? This is what they paid for? And then by the end of the season, he had 8 sacks. He had an interception and he was an integral part of a playoff run that culminated with the Super Bowl championship. So I agree with you. I just don't know if Frank Clark is that guy that we're talking about where he's worth $20 million and he can go out there and get 13 sacks. I hope that he is. And for spurts last year, we saw that. I just want to see it through a full 16 games because if the Chiefs have that guy, then I'm much less concerned about Chris Jones. Because I keep saying, if you don't have Chris Jones, let's say that he plays this year on the franchise tag and then next year he plays in a different uniform, then I don't think it drastically changes your Super Bowl window or anything like that, but it makes it a whole lot more difficult. Right now, part of the magic of that defensive line is the fact that not only do you just have Chris Jones, you have Frank Clark also. I'd feel a whole lot better, C-Dot, if this is the season that Frank Clark puts together that year you're talking about, where he blows our mind and has 13 or 14 sacks, if they're going to let Chris Jones walk.
It's kind of funny because I would say both on the offensive side and defensive side of the ball, the Chiefs have 2 people that you would say this sentence about. They didn't play nearly well enough in the regular season based on what the Chiefs are paying them, but they performed well when the games mattered most, so it's kind of smoothed over any of the criticism that people had throughout the course of the regular season. I mean, you're paying Frank Clark like he's the second best edge rusher in the NFL. He makes $21 million. He had 8 sacks last season. That's a very pedestrian, a very average season. But you're right. He did show up big in the postseason. They did need his attitude. They did need his energy. Same thing for Sammy Watkins. Nobody looks at Sammy Watkins' season as being successful last year, but he played really well in the postseason that I think it puts us in this very weird space of how to evaluate them moving forward. If you get postseason Frank Clark during the regular season, I think that justifies the contract. If you get postseason Sammy Watkins during the regular season, more than justifies that contract. But they actually got to do it for a 16-game sample that you're talking about. I mean, you're paying Frank Clark to be a guy that gets double-digit sacks every season. I don't think that's a very high bar to clear based on 20. The only edge rusher in the NFL that makes more money than him is Khalil Mack, a guy who has won Defensive Player of the Year. We were talking about last year with Sammy Watkins. He was the fourth highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, and those are guys we think have an argument to go in the NFL Hall of Fame. I don't think we're holding Frank Clark to the Khalil Mack standard, nor are we holding Sammy Watkins to the Mike Evans standard, but you need them to be more consistent regular season players. I don't think that's asking too much.
Well, 6 of those 8 sacks that you're talking about from Frank Clark came in the last 8 games, so he did turn it on. So assuming that he's healthy to begin next year, I don't think what you're asking for is extreme at all. To say go out there and have 10, 12 sacks, you're making $20 million a year. And on your comparison of Frank Clark with Sammy Watkins, Sammy's never really been that guy. Never. Sammy really has never had a season based on the kind of money that he's made. I mean, think about what Sammy got the first couple of years with the Chiefs. Think about what Sammy was getting paid by the Rams. Think about what Buffalo traded up to get him. He never really had that 12-touchdown, 1,300-yard season to justify it. Frank Clark has. I mean, a couple of years ago, Frank Clark had 13 sacks. The year before that, 9. The year before that, 10. And even last year, in limited time when he was healthy, he looked great with 8 sacks and was huge in the playoffs. So if Sammy Watkins next year is to perform at a level that he never has, and he goes out there and has 9 touchdowns and 1,200 yards, I'm going to be absolutely, I'm gonna be shocked, absolutely shocked. But if Frank Clark goes out there next year and has 50 tackles and 13 sacks and is in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, I'm not going to be surprised at all.
I want to do this poll tomorrow because I'm curious where people are. What playoff version of the player do you think we're more likely to get throughout the course of the Chiefs regular season? Is it Sammy Watkins or Frank Clark?
Gotta be Frank Clark.
Because both guys got paid, but I could see a pretty strong argument for Sammy Watkins. Like, I'm not as high on Mecole Hardman as you are this year. And the way that his contract is based, man, it's solely based on Sammy Watkins going out there and balling out. That if there was one year that you were going to have your career year and have 900 yards and 7 touchdowns, it will be this year for the Kansas City Chiefs. If you have that year, even if you don't re-sign in 2021 with the Kansas City Chiefs, you get that 3-year contract somewhere else where, hey, you can be healthy. You can continue to be a 1,000-yard one of those kind of guys. If Sammy gets hurt in this year and has another 600-yard season, I don't think that big money is coming from anywhere. You want to talk about a guy who we're looking at contract year can really step up and play big? That person will clearly be Sammy Watkins.
That's so crazy that if Sammy Watkins goes out there this year and has a career year, somebody's going to pay him and pay him huge money. I'm talking about the Colts or the Cowboys or some random team is going to go, all right, you're only, how old is he right now? 27, 28 years old? So you're only 29 years old. Maybe the Chiefs win another Super Bowl. You're a 2-time Super Bowl champion. You still got a bunch of speed. Let's see if we can make this guy our number one option here. Here's 2 years, $30 million with 20 up front guaranteed. As a fan of the Chiefs that's watched every snap Sammy Watkins has taken for the last couple of years, that seems ridiculous to me. But you're right. If he shows out this year, somebody's going to pay him again.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Chipper Jones, one of the greatest baseball players in the history of the sport. Chipper Jones will be on the show coming up in 20 minutes. Up next, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. That's next. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will be joined by one of the greatest baseball players in the game's history. Chipper Jones will be on the show. Every day this week at 3:30, we will have a different legend on the show. Chipper Jones is up first. He'll be on the show coming up momentarily. But before we get to all of that on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
Chipper barely made the Hall of Fame, though. He only got 97.9% of the vote. First ballot Hall of Famer, Chipper Jones, coming up next.
Like, I don't really think that's overselling him. He is one of the greatest baseball players of all time.
Yeah, he's one of the best third basemen. I would say George Brett, Mike Schmidt, Chipper Jones. Is that crazy? I'm looking forward to bringing him on coming up in a couple of minutes. So this weekend, they knocked down the Palace of Auburn Hills. You'll remember that is where the Malice at the Palace took place. How many sports highlights in your lifetime have been better than that particular brawl? I know we're not supposed to say that, but the truth is you can't take your eyes away even today if that highlight comes on.
I mean, I would say a lot. LeBron's block in game 7 of the finals, I would put ahead of it. Jordan probably has a couple of highlights that are ahead of it. The David Tyree helmet catch. I mean, I think there's better highlights than that, but I certainly understand the question.
No way. It just kept going forever. Like, first they go up into the stands, and then the whole thing with Jermaine O'Neal. And if
that's really the only part that I think is really memorable to watch. Like, the
which test,
the Jermaine O'Neal. The art test when he first goes up in the stands is cool. But the whole thing with Jermaine O'Neal where the fan walks on the court and Jermaine O'Neal levels one of the greatest punches I have ever seen in my life. That's the highlight of it to me.
Did that guy not look up into section 13, row 12, and see what Steven Jackson and Ron Artest were doing to the other people? And he decided that he was going to take a shot at one Jermaine O'Neal?
I mean, I don't think he was... I don't really know what his plan was. Like, in that scenario where there's a fight that's breaking out, your only thing has to be, hey, if I get hit in this situation, I have the right to sue. Because you definitely weren't going on the court and then beating up the NBA players in that scenario. Only one thing was going to happen. What actually happened? You were going to get beat up like your name was Jorge Masvidal.
All right, we didn't need that one. That was completely unnecessary. And
he got beat up.
It's not like Jermaine O'Neal went into the stands like the other dudes. This dude decided to go on the court to take on Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah, and he got dealt with. He crossed the line habitually.
Patrick Mahomes got a 99 rating in the newest Madden game, and so they're going to reveal who got the rest of the 99s coming up shortly. Whose name do you think we're going to hear?
I think Aaron Donald's going to be one of the players that gets a 99. I could see Christian McCaffrey also being one of those players. I'll throw Julio Jones in there, too. I think it's going to be those four. They get the 99 overall rating.
Nobody loves Julio Jones more than you love Julio Jones more than I love Mike Jones back in 2003. And I love Mike Jones.
And I think Julio Jones is the best wide receiver of his generation.
All right. You're wrong, but that's fine.
I mean, the answer is probably Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown's probably the best wide receiver of the 2010s, and Julio Jones is second.
Today is National French Fry Day, of course.
You know
course.
What? Actually, thinking about it, Julio Jones is the player you think Larry Fitzgerald is.
No, Larry Fitzgerald is a player I think Larry Fitzgerald is. Julio Jones doesn't get to the end zone enough. How many times has he had 10 touchdowns in his career? How many separate
once.
Times? One time.
I mean, he's led the NFL in receiving twice and catches once.
I like touchdowns. Antonio Brown averaged 14 touchdowns for a 5-year period. Antonio Brown is the correct answer to that question. If you want to say Julio Jones is next, that's cool.
Yeah, he's second. Yeah, I'm with
or
you.
Or third, after Fitz.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's clearly better than Larry Fitzgerald.
Today's National French Fry Day. What's your favorite kind of French fry? You a curly
McDonald's
guy?
McDonald's fries, the correct answer to all of these questions.
I wasn't talking establishments.
McDonald's.
I was talking type.
McDonald's.
But that's just a fry.
McDonald's.
That's just a basic fry.
That's the no. It ain't. Have you had them before?
No, I've never had McDonald's fries.
I'm just saying they ain't basic.
You any
might,
good?
I mean, you might can say like
were
fries. You might can say fries you get from Sonic are basic. The fries you get from Steak and Shake are basic. The McDonald's fries are not basic.
I actually like the Steak and Shake. The little shoestring fries, Rob. How do you feel about those? You seem like you're a waffle fry guy, aren't you?
I'm a crinkle cut fry guy myself.
No way. Literally, that's the worst cut.
McDonald's cut is the right cut.
I'll take curly fries. I'll take steak fries. Who the hell wants a curly cut fry? So MLB.com ranked their top lineups heading into this season, and two of them actually came from the AL Central. Not the Royals, not the Indians. They got the Twins and the White Sox with two of the seven best lineups. How good do you think this Royals lineup will be this season?
I think it really depends on the health of Salvador Perez, and if he goes back to being the player that he was pre-injury, I think they have a chance to be really good. He's kind of that pivotal player to me. I think they're going to need that power bat in the middle of the lineup opposite of Jorge Soler. I think it's really dependent on him.
Who do you think wins a fight, Jorge Soler or Jorge Masvidal?
Based on what I saw this weekend,
never mind. Celebrity birthday
time. I just can't believe you really hyped that guy up, and then he went out there the next time and got the absolute beat.
Did you watch his fight before that? Did you watch him beat up Ben Askren and Darren Till and all these other guys?
That ain't got nothing to do with what happened.
You watched the BMF fight against Nate Diaz?
That ain't got nothing to do with what happened on Saturday. You're right. I, I saw the Ravens play against all these other teams, and then I saw them play in the playoffs, and they didn't look so hot, and that's why you're not high on them coming to this year. I don't care about the fights pre-me meeting Jorge Masvidal. Once I knew who he was as an individual and you told me he was top 15 in America, I'm like, hey, you know what? He fights this weekend. I'm sitting there. I'm tweeting out the link. I want people to see this guy. I'm thinking, hey, he's going to be one of the baddest fighters I've ever seen. Got whipped on.
He got his foot stomped on. That was the funniest thing I've ever seen.
The beats.
You guys done?
The beats.
Rob, celebrity birthday time. How old's Cheech today?
I'm going to say Cheech is 62.
Oh, over. 63.
Cheech is 74 years old today.
Easy money. I didn't even have to think about it. I knew you were way too low.
How old's Wendy Williams today?
53.
Ooh, that's a really good number. I think she's a little older than that. I'm going to say she's 57.
She's 56, Rob. You went over. You know the rules. Oh. How old is Harrison Ford, Rob?
Harrison Ford's 72.
Oh, I think he's older than this because I remember... Whenever,
do you remember?
I remember when Bernie, the first time he ran for president, I remember thinking there's no way I'm voting for someone who is older than Harrison Ford. I think Harrison Ford's like 75.
That was your line of demarcation for age?
Like, come on now. I'm not voting for that individual. Like, I can't do it. I can't support it.
Well, Harrison,
I don't care what he thinks. I can't support that individual.
Harrison Ford is 79 years old.
Look at that.
Happy birthday.
And Harrison Ford's still trying to be an action star. Bro, your action star days are over. The action star game is a young people's game. That's a Tom Hardy game, you know? That's a Michael B. Jordan game. Harrison Ford, your action hero days are over. We don't need no more Indiana Jones, bro. They're done.
The basketball days are over, at least temporarily, for Russell Westbrook, who's come down with COVID-19. Do you think...
You say that like he tore his ACL. He'll be back in 2 weeks.
Well, let's hope so. Do you think that Russell or James Harden will ever win an NBA title?
No, I don't. I don't think Harden's game is one that works for the postseason. Oddly enough, I actually think this year is probably both of their best chance to do it.
And they have no chance in hell this year.
I don't know. I don't know what to expect this year in the NBA.
If LeBron gets COVID and Kawhi gets COVID, then they got a chance.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is this year, I think we sort of have to eliminate everything we've ever thought. We've never seen refreshed James Harden go into the postseason, where I think that his style of play and his usage really wears down on him late into the season. We've never seen it before. We know that happens with Russell Westbrook. With his style of play, by the end of the season, after he's played that hard for 82 games, he basically got a vacation in the middle of the season. Like, I don't know who's going to be good and bad once we go back into this thing. So I'm with you. I don't think Houston's winning the NBA championship either. I'm just saying is I think this is their best chance. I don't think they go 2-for-27 in a playoff game the way they did, where they probably should have went to the finals that year.
No, that's a good point on James Harden, that every time he gets in the playoffs, he feels like he's done. Like, there's no more tread left on the tires.
It's over.
Except you're basically asking him not to beat the Clippers or the Lakers in a playoff series.
I actually think they match up well against the Clippers. Look at it.
But they'd have to beat both of them, and that's just to get to the finals.
I mean, they've matched up as well against the Clippers. They've actually matched up better against the Clippers than I think the Lakers have. And, I mean, their advantage against the Lakers is a clear one. We're going to beat you with small versus big. Like, they don't have the inside presence to match up with the Lakers at all. But if they can get hot in this scenario, and you got to also factor in, now you don't have to go on the road for that pivotal game. I would have given the Rockets no chance to go on the road. Let's say it's tied 2-2, and they're supposed to be going on the road to Staples. No chance of winning that game in my mind. They now got a chance of winning that. Houston's probably the one team outside of the big three that I actually give a chance to win the NBA championship this year.
Give me like one of those random East teams, I guess. Philadelphia, somebody. If I have to pick a team that's not the Bucks, the Lakers, or the Clippers, it's not going to be anybody, but if you made me do that exercise, I guess I'll take the Philadelphia 76ers. Oh, we got to get out of here. Chipper Jones coming up next. You're now outside the mind of the machine.
One of the greatest baseball players in the history of the sport, Chipper Jones, will join us coming up on the other side of the break. Keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on the Drive. It is an honor to be joined by our next guest. Quite frankly, he is one of the best baseball players to ever live. He is an 8-time All-Star. He won a World Series back in 1995, won the National League MVP Award in 1999. He's also won the Silver Slugger Award twice, and he won a batting champion in 2008. He is also in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. It is an honor to be joined by our next guest. Chipper Jones joined us on the show. Chipper, really appreciate you coming on. Let's start with this. You're one of the few athletes that we've ever had on that have never played in Kansas City. How many times have you actually been here before?
I actually drove right past the ballpark last week. As some people know, I have a hunting show on Sportsman's Channel called Major League Bow Hunter. And I drove out to Kansas to set up a couple of new farms that I acquired this year, and rode by the ballpark. And I was thinking to myself, man, it's hard to believe as long as interleague play has been going on, I believe since 97 or 98, that the Braves did not play one series in Kansas City. And in fact, the only game that I ever played in Kansas City was my last All-Star game in 2012. So I got one at bat off Chris Sale in the All-Star game and got a base hit. So I'd have to say Kansas City's been pretty good to me.
No, Kansas City certainly was good to you in the All-Star game. You're a hunter. I would assume at some point that you have also gone hunting with Ned Yost. You got to give us one great Ned Yost hunting story.
I actually have never been hunting with Ned.
How does this happen? Like, Ned, the few times that we've talked, Ned loves hunting more than anything in the world. You played with the Braves. He coached with the Braves. I feel like at some point you guys would have crossed paths and you guys would have gone hunting at least once.
Baseball players and coaches kind of go their separate ways, you know, once the season is over. It's, you know, it's almost like we need time away from each other. You know, we spend about 8 months out of the year together, you know, eating, drinking, sleeping, baseball, that everybody just kind of has their own way of, you know, in our case, going and climbing up a tree and just kind of recharging the batteries. No, but Ned, what a great guy. So happy for him. Not only him, but Dayton Moore, another, you know, ex-Brave, I would say, who's gone out to Kansas City and experienced the success and winning a world championship, you know, the way they did. It was, you know, everybody here in Braves country is extremely happy for him.
Trust me, I understand wanting to get away from your coworkers, Chipper. The guy next to me is just absolutely exhausting. We got Chipper Jones with us here on the drive. So we got this guy named Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure you heard of, MVP Super Bowl champion, and he signed the biggest contract 2 days ago in the history of American sports. And we always talk about, well, he's got to win two or three or four or five Super Bowls. Your Braves team is thought of as one of the greatest teams of all time. Then everybody always wants to bring up, well, they only won one World Series. Do you look at it that way?
Oh, no. I mean, anybody who's been around the game and played the game knows that we won a lot here in Atlanta. And for, you know, three quarters to four fifths of my career, every year that we came into camp, you know, we were expected to win, you know, the National League East and give ourselves an opportunity to win a world championship. Obviously, you know, things didn't go our way sometimes. We didn't play well sometimes, you know, in the postseason. It's unfortunate that we have that knock, but we have won more than a lot of other teams, you know, and I certainly, you know, cherish being the last team standing, you know, there at the end of October, the one time that we did it. So much about baseball is momentum and who the hot team is, you know, at the right time of the year. And, you know, as you've seen through the years, you know, a lot of times the wild card teams in baseball have a tendency to go further than some of the better teams that actually have better records because of the fact that every game for them for the last month has been somewhat of a playoff game. And they come in razor sharp, whereas, you know, a team with the best record who clinches their division on September the 5th and doesn't play a meaningful game for, you know, almost a month is a little bit rusty going into the postseason. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I think that's what makes the playoff format that we have in baseball so intriguing, because it really, truly gives everybody a fair shot to win.
Chipper, of course, I was talking about Pat, and he plays for the Chiefs, and you played for the Braves, and the name Redskins is in the news right now. How would you feel if they came calling for the Braves name as far as changing it, considering that's who you played for your whole career?
Well, it's something we need to talk about and sit down and give a listen to. I saw something this morning reading on social media that the Braves, you know, are sitting down and talking not only about the name Braves, but the Tomahawk Chop. I think, you know, some people remember a member of the St. Louis Cardinals bullpen from last year had some Indian heritage in his background, and a reporter asked him about the Tomahawk Chop, and he said, yeah, it offends me. And, you know, I think you'll remember the Braves did not play the Tomahawk Chop during the playoff series, you know, out of respect for that young man. So it's obvious that we need to sit down and talk about some things. There's, you know, a lot of change going on in America right now, and to ignore something like this would be a mistake, and I'm sure the Braves will give it its due diligence and make a decision accordingly.
Speaking of that change in the world that we live in now, of course, you're retired, but if you weren't, knowing that you've got a life separate from baseball and a family and other obligations, would you play this season?
I've been asked that question a lot. I have seven boys, four of them who live here at the house, the youngest being two. But I also have two 70-year-old parents who live on property with us. And, you know, I think every player has to assess their own situation. And, you know, if I was single and didn't have, you know, wasn't coming home to a family, you know, have my own place, I'd be hell-bent to go play. But in my current situation, with things the way they are right now, not really being educated on all the protocols and whatnot, I would probably lean towards not playing. My father's, you know, he's been a little sick of late, nothing COVID-related. My mom's healthy as a horse. But still, I, you know, them being here on property with the family, we eat lunch together a couple times a week. We eat dinner, you know, a few times a week. So exposing them to COVID would be something that I would have to weigh. And you know, as we sit here right now, I would probably be leaning more towards not playing as opposed to playing.
Right now we're talking to the 8-time All-Star. He also was the National League MVP in 1999. He is also in the National Baseball Hall of Fame, a first ballot inductee in 2018. I want to go back to your career. You might be one of the greatest switch hitters of all time. When did you first learn that you had this ability?
Very early. My dad, being a baseball coach, his favorite player, you know, of all time was Mickey Mantle. You know, and so me growing up kind of in the shadow, walking in the footsteps of my dad, wherever he went, you know, I was a sponge. I absorbed all of that, you know, kind of growing up. And, you know, he was the head baseball coach at our local high school. He was the offensive coordinator on the football team. He was, you know, an assistant coach on the basketball team. So we were playing whatever was in season. That being said, I knew where my bread was buttered come the springtime. And obviously a lot of time was spent sitting in front of the TV watching the Saturday games of the week, you know, with Tony Kubek and Joe Garagiola. And then after that game was over, man, out into the backyard we went, where we were imitating the lineups. And anytime a left-handed hitter came up, he made me hit left-handed, you know. And that's kind of where it all started. And people ask me all the time the advantage to switch hitting. Yes, it's twice the work, but trust me, you do not want to see a Randy Johnson slider from the left-handed batter's box. You want to see that thing coming into you as opposed to going away from you. Those breaking balls, those sliders coming into you are a heck of a lot easier to hit than, you know, if they were sweeping away from you. So that's a huge reason why somebody would switch it.
Chipper, you bring up Randy Johnson. Obviously, you played against a lot of great players. You also played with a lot of great players. We talk about Bo Jackson here in Kansas City a lot for obvious reasons. You actually got to play with Deion Sanders. What kind of athlete was he, and how remarkable was it that he could play football on Sundays and be a shutdown corner, but also hit 270 with you guys in Atlanta?
Well, I had the blessing of playing with two multi-sport stars in Deion Sanders and Brian Jordan. BJ was an outstanding athlete. Deion, I can't imagine there being a faster human being than Deion. I mean, he made things look so effortless. There is nothing more beautiful than watching that guy hit a ball in the right center field gap and watching him turn those bases all the way to third base and get there easily. You know, he was a fun loving guy. You know, a lot of people think that Deion is, you know, cocky and you know, the prime time persona is really so much different than what Deion really is, you know, when you get him off camera. I think it's almost his alter ego that shows up on camera sometimes. But a phenomenal athlete. When I was playing left field and he was playing center, we had a blast out there playing together. I can only imagine, you know, you put another 30 pounds on Deion Sanders, you know, and the ability to hit the ball 500 feet, and that's what you got in Bo Jackson. I've gotten a chance to – Bo is actually a big deer hunter like myself, so he came in the clubhouse there my last year or two, and he came over and sat in my locker, and we didn't talk one second about baseball. It was all about – bow hunting, and you know, he's quite an interesting guy. I enjoyed my time hanging out with him.
Deion is in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You're in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. What is it like to get that call to Cooperstown?
It leveled me. It absolutely just astonished me. I mean, it was the culmination of basically 40 years in the game of baseball, starting at 7 years old and in the backyard, and then just kind of a lightning flash before your eyes of, you know, your little league teams and your high school teams and your American Legion teams and your it just, you know, all the way up through the minors and going through that, and then obviously 19 years in the big leagues, you know, it all seemed to just fly by, and then, you know, you're getting a call and now you're in one of the most elite fraternities, you know, on the planet, you know, and I never set out to make it to the Hall of Fame. I wanted to be great at my job, but, you know, I never even really allowed myself to think about it, because all those guys that were in there are guys that I put on such a high pedestal that I never thought I could actually live up to that, and then to, you know, to be a part of them and have them call me and walk up to me, you know, in Cooperstown and say welcome to the family was just I mean, you should have seen me, man. My eyes were as big around as grapefruits, you know, walking around that place the first time, and it's something that I'm very, very proud of.
Some people barely get into the Hall of Fame, and then there's you with 97.2% of the vote. Another guy that's in that club is George Brett, who played his whole career here in Kansas City. And I was actually looking at a list earlier today, Chipper, on MLB.com that ranked the best third baseman of all time, and they had you and George Brett 1 and 2. Was he somebody that you used to watch growing up?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, growing up in, you know, I was born in 72, so you know, right there around 1980 to 1990, those were my formative years, you know, my teenage years, my little league years. And, you know, it was really, you were talking about two guys as perennially the best players in baseball were George Brett and Mike Schmidt. How funny that they both, you know, played third base. How funny that, you know, they are normally ranked in the top one, two, three greatest third basemen of all time. So their careers kind of mirrored each other. Now, Schmidt was less average, more homers. You know, George was, you know, scared 400, you know, less homers, but, you know, gold gloves. And, I mean, just awesome, awesome baseball players. So, you know, I grew up as a shortstop, but I love to go over to third base and take ground balls. And one of the reasons for that was, you know, that I really loved the way George played the game, willing to do whatever he had to do for the team to win. If he needed a big homer, it seemed like he could hit the ball out of the ballpark at will, but he'd much rather go out there and try and scare 400 every year instead of hitting the big homer. He was just an awesome, awesome player. Anytime I get a chance to sit down with him and Schmitty in Cooperstown, I certainly take that opportunity.
You won a batting title at age 36. What goes into the process where you break into the league at age 21 in 1993, and then in the latter part of your career, you win such a prestigious award where you hit 364?
Yeah, it was most of the time. You know, I think if I was going through my peak years, if I came out of spring training and said, "Hey, I want to go out and try and hit 350 or 360," I probably could have done it, but I would have sacrificed a bunch of power to be able to do that. On the flip side, if I had come out of spring training in my peak years and said, "Hey, I want to hit 40 plus homers," I probably could have done it, but my average would have suffered. I probably would have hit 250, 260. I was obsessed with hitting 300, you know, and I felt like I could do the best of both worlds. If I hit 300 and still hit 30 homers and drive in 100 runs, score 100 runs. Well, during that year in 2008, about a third of the way through the season, I hurt my shoulder on a dive. And it really affected my ability to be able to extend my swing, meaning hitting the ball out of the ballpark. So at that point, I just kind of cut down my swing, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to go out and try and hit 400. And Shiambi and I were talking from ESPN last night, and I was over 466 games into the season that year. And at that point, I was like, I got so caught up with having to answer questions about hitting 400 that I found myself trying to go out and hit 400 instead of, you know, getting healthy and hitting the ball out of the ballpark. It was a great year. Everything I touched turned to gold early in the season, and everything fell in, and we had a good run at 400 there for a while, but held off, you know, Big Albert the Machine for the batting title in the last week of the season. So, yeah, 364, man. That's a career year for me, no doubt.
That is Chipper Jones. He is an 8-time All-Star. He won a World Series in 1995. He was the National League MVP in 1999, and he was inducted into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame in 2018 on the first ballot. Chipper, it was an honor to sit down and talk with you as someone who grew up watching a lot of Braves games on TBS. We really appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Y'all stay safe out there, okay?
We definitely will. I was trying to think about this. Chipper's probably the second best baseball player that's ever been on this show. George Brett, I would say, is number one when you look at what he accomplished in his career. Chipper's probably second. It was really cool that we got an opportunity to catch up with him. So every day this week at 3:30, we're catching up with a different baseball legend. Today, we were joined by Chipper Jones. Chipper was kind of right place, right time. Great baseball player. Was on a great team in a major market, cool nickname, and the explosion of cable television, sort of the way WGN was, I think, a lot of people's connection with the Chicago Bulls, because you had an opportunity to watch them where in the 70s and 80s you wouldn't have had a chance to watch them and sort of follow the team. I mean, those Braves teams, you got to see all the highs and lows right there on TBS at a time where cable really started to explode.
Yeah, every kid about our age grew up watching Cubs games or White Sox games on WGN and Braves games on TNT or TBS. I guess I'd only push back
Is Chipper a cool nickname, or is he just such a good baseball player that we let it slide that his nickname was Chipper? And I'm not throwing insults. I got the corniest nickname in the history of sports radio. They call me the sports machine, but this guy's real name is Larry, and there's nothing wrong with a classic name like Larry Jones. You think Chipper's a cool nickname?
I think Chipper's a cool nickname if you're a baseball player. I don't know if Chipper's a cool nickname if you play in the NBA. I don't know if Chipper's a cool nickname if you're a wide receiver in the NFL.
It's not. It most definitely is not.
But when you're a 90s baseball player and your nickname is based off you were a chip off your dad's block and that's why you were called Chipper instead of calling you Larry Jr., yeah, I think Chipper's a cool nickname in that sense.
Is that true or you made that up on the spot?
That's it. I read his Wikipedia page.
Oh, well, if you read his Wikipedia, then it makes it true. Yeah, it's for a baseball player, you're right. I feel like baseball players' nicknames, it can slide a little bit. Like, corny's okay. Remember Ned? He would just add a Y to everybody. Oh, that's Flanny. Oh, that's Jack. Like, hey, that's fine, I guess. You're right. Chipper's not a terrible nickname.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about it. Like, I don't really want to, like, undersell how cool of a player Chipper Jones was in the night. There were some players that, regardless of where you lived, everybody was a fan of. I would say Jeter, at least early on, Jeter was cool. I know it got like cool to not like Jeter in the 2000s, but in the 90s, everybody liked Derek Jeter. Everybody liked Ken Griffey Jr. Everybody liked Chipper Jones. Like, it didn't matter if you grew up in Boston. It didn't matter if you grew up in San Francisco. Everybody loved those three players, where I think it's very different. I would say this generation, they don't have a Chipper Jones. Like, they don't have the really cool, really identifiable athlete that you feel that connection to.
Bryce Harper.
Yes, one person, though. I'm saying is, like, we could probably name four or five players in the 90s that were really popular, that were a part of pop culture. I don't think that player exists now today. I'm with you. Bryce Harper's probably the only one. Who else is it?
Ken Griffey Jr. is probably the most popular baseball player of all time. Like, have you ever met, you know, you always meet that guy that doesn't like another guy because he wants to be original. Have you ever met that guy with Ken Griffey Jr.?
No.
I've never met somebody that's like, no, I didn't, except for Ron, I guess, that thought Ken Griffey Jr. was overrated.
Because, like, think about it in other sports. Like, in the NBA, there's 30 guys that I would say are popular players in the NBA. Like, Kyrie Irving, probably not a top 10 player in the league, but Kyrie Irving, I would say, is a popular player amongst kids. I look in the NFL. Hell, we can just go quarterback position. There's 12 just at that position, not counting all the wide receivers and running backs. How many baseball players today would you say they are cool? I don't think the number's that high.
Yeah, I can't really think of any, and I'm not even the biggest fan of Bryce Harper. You know how I feel that he's a little bit overrated based on what he's getting paid. Yeah, 10, 15 years ago, it was a little bit different. I feel like with guys like Frank Thomas and even some pitchers like Pedro Martinez, I don't know what changed, but all of a sudden, I can't really think of a baseball player that I can point to. I think it's the marketability factor, because baseball does not market their players at all.
Football got a lot bigger, too. Football is a bigger deal in 2020 than it was when we were growing up. I'm not saying that the NFL wasn't a huge deal, but you can make a case that in 1991, baseball was still the most popular sport in America. I don't think baseball is probably one of the four most popular sports now. I would say the NFL is certainly ahead of it. College football is ahead of it. The NBA is probably ahead of it. Maybe baseball comes in as the fourth most popular sport. That's not how it was when we were growing up.
Yeah, growing up, it was, if you started listing the 20 most recognizable American athletes, there would be five or six baseball players. The Griffey Juniors, the Frank Thomases, a guy like Ichiro, maybe even a guy like the Big Unit or Roger Clemens. Mm-hmm. Now, if I said, take the 20 best athletes in American sports that are the most recognizable, are any of them? Is Bryce Harper, is Mike Trout even on that list? I don't think so.
I think Harper's probably on the list. Maybe. On the back half of Maybe. It, but I'm with you. I don't think he's near the top. Do you think he's ahead of Jorge Masvidal, who got the beats over this weekend? Because you told me last week he was more popular than Bryce Harper. Now, after he got beat up in this fight, he's got to his proper place, to like 73rd on this
no,
list.
No, he's not that low. You get your ass kicked and you move from 19 to 73?
He was never as high up as you said he was.
He's probably, never as low as 73.
He was
either.
Probably 65 on the list, and no. Now that beating has him at 81.
Get out of here.
Coming up next, you see a comparison between the Chiefs and the Braves. We'll get into it coming up. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.